People love superheroes. You might love superheroes. Stories of superheroes are intriguing. We hear these stories, you can think of several off the top of your head, Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, whoever it is that's your favorite superhero. Superhero stories are interesting because they take human qualities and they push them to the extremes, right? Creating these people who are superhuman. Many of these superhero stories were devised really to tell moral lessons, exaggerating some human quality or some human trait in order to tell a story, to make a point, right? Exaggerations of human ability are the things that make these superheroes superhuman, right? And it's always these things that we find really interesting, whether it's something like flight, which maybe is just somebody's exaggerated athletic ability or ability to jump, or strength, an exaggerated strength that becomes somebody who's suddenly so strong or even invincible. Stealth, things like that, exaggerated to the point of invisibility. But you have these exaggerations of human abilities that become superpowers. And superpowers make superheroes. And it's interesting. It's interesting to read these stories, recognizing that they're fantasy, but recognizing that they're maybe telling a point. And that there's something to these superpowers. The superpowers are what really get us. We look at a superpower and we go, oh, superpower, wow. What is that? Whether you have thought about it this way or not, each of us have a God-given superpower. Same one, across the board. All of us have this superpower. At least the way the Bible talks about it, it really is a superpower. It's something that you have within you that you often maybe overlook in terms of this ability. It's something that we don't always use quite as effectively as we could in a super kind of way. But it's this power. It's a power that you have that has the ability to change the course of someone else's life, to change the course of your life, to build up somebody else's life, in a sense to even give life, as the scriptures imply. Or if you use it for evil, or if you just avoid it or just sort of neglect it, if you leave it unchecked, it will tear down and it will destroy. If you turn over to Proverbs 18:21, let's examine this superpower. And this is the superpower we're looking at today. Proverbs 18, verse 21, says, death and life, life and death are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Death and life. The scriptures go to that extreme to say that your words and the way that you use them results in death or life. What you say has great power, and you will reap consequences, positive or negative, depending on what outcomes please you. If you enjoy seeing the fruits of good words, of good things said, you'll reap fruit based on that. If you like seeing the effects, if you like seeing the effects, or you like the feeling that you get from belittling someone or making yourself feel good by whatever it is, being witty and cutting somebody else down, you'll reap the effects of that too. It says, that's the implication here. Those who love it, for good or for bad, those who love the tongue, love the speech, love their ability to use words, whether for good or for bad, will eat its fruit, whether good or bad. The main point today is simply this. Your words will give life or they will destroy. And the Bible really just makes it that cut and dry and simple. Obviously, we want our words to give life. We want our words to be positive and meaningful and uplifting. We want them to last, right? When somebody comes to you and says, you know, you said this to me so many years ago or so long ago, and you step back and you maybe didn't realize that it had this impact, whether good or bad, it can really hit you. And you realize, wow, that word, those words that I said really lasted. They had an impact. And in a sense, that's a good thing to desire. It's a good thing to want to be able to speak in such a way that it has a positive, lasting effect on someone. We want our words to give life, to enhance life, to build up. A few Proverbs. You don't need to turn there. Proverbs 10:11 says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life." Proverbs 10:21 says, "The lips of the righteous feed many." Proverbs 16:24, "Pleasant words are an overflowing of honey, sweetness to the soul and healing to the bones." How do you use your words? And do those things describe your words? I would love to think that those describe the way that I talk, but surely that's not always true. Do your words enliven? Do they lift up and they build up? Are they a fountain of life? Do they feed? Do they feed many? Can people come to you for advice or for input or just seek out what it is that you might have to say on a subject, knowing that there's knowledge, knowing that there's wisdom in those words? Are they healing? Are they comforting? Do they provide that when somebody's in need or in pain? Are your words the kind of words that will encourage and inspire? That's where we want our words. As we heard last week, we want to be considering each other, provoking each other to good works. And one key method of doing that, of course, is by our words and what we say. But there's a challenge, right? There's a challenge to having a life-giving tongue. There's a challenge to having words that can be described as life-giving, as a fountain of life, as healing, as comforting. Let's turn over to Matthew 12. Verse 34. If you've read this, you probably knew we were going here. Matthew 12:34. All of this Jesus is saying in the context of our words, of how we speak. He's talking to the Pharisees about their words and about the things that they're saying. But all of this here, he says, in the context of our words. This is from the New Living Translation. It says, "You brood of snakes, how could evil men like you speak what is good and right? For whatever is in your heart determines what you say. A good person produces good or good words from a good heart, and an evil person produces evil words from an evil heart." Your words, if we can just distill it down, he's saying your words reveal who you are, right? Your words are really one of the prime indicators of who you are on the inside, of what's in your heart, really and truthfully. And that has some pretty significant implications. First off, if our words are revealing what's within us, then obviously others will learn about us and know us by our words. If you and I interact, there's an exchange of dialogue. That's really our primary communication in terms of learning about who the other person is. You can learn things from body language and from expressions and whatnot. But in terms of the actual ideas, the things in your head and the communication, your words are a very significant portion of what's being communicated. And so other people learn about us, whether we want them to know or not. They learn about us by our words, by the things that come out of our mouths. Maybe by things in direct conversation, maybe things they overhear us saying, maybe things they've heard us say secondhand. But they know us by our words. Ecclesiastes 10:3 says it this way. It says also, this is the literal version, it says, "And also in the way which a stupid one walks, his heart fails, and he says to all that he is a fool." So the implication is the way that he lives his life, the way that he goes about his day, his heart fails him, right? As we read that out of the heart, out of the abundance of the heart, you speak. His heart fails him, and he tells everybody he's a fool. Obviously, he's not walking around telling people, "Hey, I'm a fool. I'm an idiot." But he is out of the failings of his heart, right? Out of what's not in there, out of what's missing. He's making it very evident who he is on the inside. It's making it evident what his character is, whether he realizes it or not. Often we would think the implication here would be not, that he probably does not realize. Because if you did realize, hey, I'm giving myself away, that I'm really kind of an empty and shallow person and I'm kind of a foolish person, you wouldn't be saying those things. But a foolish person, in the way that he lives his life, tells everybody that he's a foolish person, right? We don't want to be in that boat. We don't want people necessarily to be able to look at us and say, yeah, that's not really a great person there, by who we live and what we say. We want to be able to demonstrate God living in us by what we say and who we are. And one way or another, people will read us and know us by what we say. The second implication of this, of what Jesus says in Matthew 12, is that we can learn what's in our heart by watching what comes out of our mouth, just the same way that other people do. But oftentimes we're a little bit blind to who we are, what we're saying. We don't always pay attention to what's coming out of our mouth or the tone. Or, you know, we know the thoughts in our head, but we don't always know the thoughts coming out of our mouth. We don't always read them the way that other people are going to read them. But if we stop and we carefully consider, and maybe we look not even just specifically at things said, although that can be helpful, but trends in how we talk, trends in our speech, we're able to gauge what's in our heart. We're able to gauge what really is inside of us, who we really are. Mr. Robin Weber, in a message he gave in 2002 called A Transformed Tongue, he uses the analogy of a dipstick. When you go to check out the fluids in your car, you pop the hood open, you have a dipstick. You pull that dipstick out, you wipe it off, you stick it back in there, you pull it out, and you're looking at your oil. You're looking for two main things, right? Is there enough in there? You're looking at quality or quantity, and you're looking at the quality of that oil, right? You're looking at how much is in there, and you're looking, is it dirty? Is it clean? Is it, you know, how good is it? That same way, you monitor your words. You can watch the words coming out of your mouth. If there's really not a lot inside of a person, you can see it in their speech. An older gentleman that used to be here in Phoenix, he and I were talking, and he mentioned to me one time that in his business, he worked with a lot of people who were really, really foul-mouthed. And he said that usually his observation was that people with really foul mouths just don't have anything to say. So they fill it with other things. And it's just sort of an indicator. It's not a good quantity of speech. And it's not a good quality of speech. There's not much they have worth saying, so they fill it with expletives or whatever it is. Just things that aren't worth saying. But you can look at that. You can look at the quality of your speech. You can look at the quantity of your speech. We're not talking about things like grammar, right? That's a different topic altogether. We're talking about what you're saying. We're talking about, you know, what do I say when I'm in conversation with one of you here at church, or with my wife at home, or with my kids? You know, what's the quality of that conversation? And we can gauge and we can really learn a lot of things about ourselves, whether we want to or not, by our words and by what we're saying. The big implication here of what Jesus is saying is that the challenge in mastering the tongue is not mastering the tongue. The primary challenge in mastering the tongue is mastering the heart. We have to master our thoughts, our motives, to really be able to control what's being said and what's coming out of our mouths. You don't need to turn there. Proverbs 22:11 says, "He who loves pureness of heart, grace is on his lips, and the king shall be his friend." So pureness of heart results in grace being on your lips, in words that are meaningful and life-giving and uplifting. So then we see the primary challenge, if we're going to control the tongue, is to manage the heart, right? But we do them in tandem. Right? If we're focused on the tongue, we're going to, by nature, be controlling and managing the heart. Let's look at the downside of this. So there's our challenge, right? Manage the heart, manage the tongue. What happens if we don't meet that challenge? What happens if we fail? What are the results of failure to control our tongues? Let's turn over to James. James 3. James 3, there's plenty here that James says indicting us about our tongues. But let's look at verses 5 and 6. He says, "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire," he says, and he goes on. And we think about this sometimes in how small the tongue is, but consider, if you will, where he lived, his climate, right? Very similar to the climate in California. And every year, we around about summertime, we start seeing these fires and these blazes that happen over there in California. And usually, when you think about those, you hear about the news of these massive fires that burn and burn thousands of acres. And you'll hear, oh, they discovered that it was started because of a cigarette thrown out of a car window. Or it was started because somebody didn't quite put their campfire out. Or it was started because of a lightning strike that, you know. It's always something small, right? It's always this little thing. And when it goes unmanaged, it bursts into a massive, massive blaze. And so it was when Paul writes this, when James writes this, that in his society, same kind of thing. They had these fires, right? They had massive fires, I'm sure. Probably not the fire departments that we have today with, you know, airlifting capabilities and whatnot. They had these fires that could burn massive, massive amounts of area. And he's likening our tongue, our words to this. That if we don't manage it, if there's nobody managing and pushing back on that thing, it just burns. It just goes, right? Even we see in California or up in Sholo, we see when these fires get going, when they get out of control, they're very difficult to manage. They're difficult even when you have teams and thousands, well, hundreds, I'm not sure about thousands of people working to keep these fires in check. It's very hard to manage them, right? He's likening that to our words, to what we say. If we're not managing and controlling what comes out of our mouth, if we're not proactive in how we work with it and how we manage it, it just goes out of control. It just burns, right? Left unchecked, our words destroy. Remember Proverbs 18:21, that death and life are in the power of the tongue. If they're left unchecked, they destroy. If they're fueled, they destroy even more. You think of these fires that burn, and you think, you know, you'll hear the newscasters come on and say, oh, and it's just making it worse because we have such high winds, right? You get something fueling it, or you say, oh, well, it's going to be really bad this year because it's so dry, and it's been so dry for so long without rain. Whatever it is, you'll hear these reports. When there's fuel there, when there's something fueling that fire, it especially burns. Right? But even just left unchecked, what James is saying is that just leaving that fire unchecked, just leaving that tongue unchecked, it's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt other people, and it's going to destroy. One of the great lessons of superhero stories, right? Going back to our superheroes. When you see these stories, the really meaningful parts of these stories are usually about the superhero learning to master control of his abilities. Right? He's able to take whatever gift he has, whatever power he has, whatever ability he has, and be able to control it, to not use it for his own ends, to not use it for whatever purpose, but to be able to be disciplined about it, to be able to bring it into control. And that's usually what a lot of these superhero stories are about, is being able to control whatever habit or whatever gift we've been given. And for us, we have this gift of language that we're able to use and able to share. Let's look at a few of the things that can result when we just leave it unchecked. First one is anger. Sometimes if it's not wrong to be angry, right? The scripture says, be angry and do not sin. But anger can result in one of those situations where we're very susceptible to to letting it be known what's really in our heart by our words. Right? We can have anger directed at someone. Somebody hurts me, and so I'm going to go to that person and talk to them, right? And that's a good thing, right? We're told to do that. We're told if somebody offends you, you go and you talk to them. And there's wisdom in that. But if we let that anger carry us away, suddenly our words turn into something that is hurtful, destructive, right? Problematic. Or if somebody comes to me and says that I hurt them and I get angry, right? It's very easy for me to attack back and be destructive and be hurtful. Also, anger that is maybe just sort of taken out on somebody else. You're having a bad day, you're having issues with something, you know, and we all do this. We have a rough day, we get really annoyed with something, and you know how it goes. You're having that bad day, and then somebody comes along and asks you or tells you something or says something to you that just, why would anybody say that to you, right? And where do we go with that? You know, if we allow it, if we aren't keeping our words in check, if our heart's not in check, then our words are very destructive. They can be very hurtful. They can come out and they can attack and they can cut down and really dig into someone in ways that are just not helpful at all. At the heart of some of these anger related abuses of our language, it's really about, you know, feeling embarrassed or feeling inadequate, feeling guilty, feeling mistreated. And so in anger, we use our words and we lash out in defense or in punishment of someone for being in a certain way to us. And it's easy to take our words and do that. It takes a lot of control, obviously, to not do that, to have our hearts in check and be able to keep our hearts in the right place in that situation. So really, again, we're just making the point that managing our words is really about managing our heart, keeping our hearts in a right place. Another area is lies. The Bible's very clear on this one. We don't need to talk about it too much. But lying is very destructive. Lying destroys, it kills in some cases. Satan is the father of it. We know that. And really at the heart of a lie is distrust of God. Mr. Weber, in his sermon, he said it this way. He said, when we feel that somehow we have to take matters into our own hands because we don't think that God understands, we run with the lie and it's all us. It's not God, it's all us. It says we want to protect our image rather than conform to God's. And that's really the core of the lie. Very destructive. And again, it takes controlling the heart and having a mastery of what's in our heart and where we are, who we are, how we're yielding our heart to God in order to control our words and control the things coming out of our mouth. Another area that the Bible has a lot to say about is slander. And slander is one of those issues that sometimes we dress up because nobody says, oh, hey, would you like to hear a rumor? Right? You don't have that. Oh, or hey, let's get together after church and gossip. Nobody says it that way, right? We disguise it. We upgrade it. We turn it into something else. Right, but it's rumors. It's maybe it's news. I got to tell you some news about someone. Let's go talk, right? But it's rumors. It's gossip, and God calls it slander. Proverbs 26:22. If you'll turn over there, Proverbs are loaded with thoughts about slander and the destructive nature. Proverbs 26, verse 22. In the literal version, it says this. It says, the words of a talebearer are his wounds. Yours might say morsels. The word is, from my understanding, from what I've read, is more accurately translated wounds. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down in the innermost parts of the belly. So we learn a couple of things from this. Slander is enticing to hear, right? It is. It's interesting to hear about someone or something that happened, right? And it's in our nature to be interested in that. So when the slanderer comes to talk to you, they're putting down a stumbling block in front of you, because they're really saying, hey, I know your nature is prone to wanting to listen to this and be involved in this. And so here, let's talk about this, right? When we go and do that to somebody else, it's extremely hurtful. It's hurtful to the person we're talking to. It's hurtful to the person we're talking about. Because now we've thrown a stumbling block in front of this person, and we've cut this person's reputation down to nothing. It's enticing to hear. It's also painful, to the point of death. My wife and I were talking about this this message, and she was relating to me an interview she had seen with a couple of mothers who were on a show who were talking about their sons who had killed themselves because of slander at school. And it's not the kind of teasing that, you know, maybe we're expecting or that we know comes from being in school and in high school. This was slander, harsh slander that was going around an entire school, to the point that these children in their state, whatever state they were in, you know, and you can say, well, maybe they should have had better relationships with their parents or friends or better support group or whatever. But their state, in the current state that they were in, slander was enough to push them to kill themselves, right? And so it's that destructive. It'll take life. You remember, again, Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. What we say has that much weight, and it can give life or it can take it. If you jump back a couple of verses, Proverbs 26:20, it says, where there is no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no talebearer, the fighting ceases. When that kind of thing goes away, suddenly there are a lot fewer issues. When people are minding their own business and not talking about other people's business, then suddenly the fighting stops. Obviously, there's a good kind of talking about each other that we can do. You know, sharing positive stories, positive things that have happened to people, sharing stories that people would want to be public so that you could pray for them. Obviously, those things are not covered under slander. Those things are different. And sometimes we need to know those things because we need to be praying for somebody. But we have to be very careful that that is obviously and clearly something that somebody would want to be known and would want to have shared. Really, at the heart of slander, a few different things could be there. Could be hatred. Could be hatred towards someone. And so I'm just going to spill this about them, cut them down. Or more often, probably in our cases, it would really just stem from apathy. You know, we just don't care what our words are going to do, and so let's share the story. And you know, I don't really care, not really thinking about what kind of impact this is going to have on that person. And I just think it'd be interesting for you to know, and it's something to talk about. And so here we go. It's just what's there in your heart. You know, what is inside of you, and what's really fueling what you're saying. You know, we obviously have to be watching that. We have to be very careful about it and keeping our heart in check, keep our words in check. Mr. Weber said it this way. So the next time somebody asks you to talk about somebody else and they're not present, recognize that you are trespassing. He says that is what rumors do. They trespass on another person's character and integrity. I thought that was very, very meaningful. So how do we reach the goal then? We want to be in that positive state where our words are life-giving, where our words are encouraging, where our words are building people up, provoking each other to good works. Well, if we're thinking now about reaching that goal, we realize we can't just work on the way that we talk, right? Because it's not just about how we talk. It's our heart, as Jesus Christ revealed to us. It's what's in our heart. So using that superpower effectively, using your words effectively, really requires a change of heart. Proverbs 15:28 says it this way. The heart of the righteous studies to answer. The heart of the righteous fuels their words. Studies to know how to answer something. It's okay somebody asks you a question, it's okay to come across as, well, you know, I don't know. Or if you're in a conversation where you just don't know how to respond, it's okay to not respond. It's okay to pull back on the response, consider it, think about it, come back to it. The heart of the righteous studies to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. It's like it's just pouring out. It's just spewing out evil things. There's just a lot of words coming out. So we really need to stop and consider. Stop and consider what we say. If you look over in James again, let's go back to James 3. James 3, verses 3 and 4. It says it this way. In terms of, we can look at this in terms of how we proceed and how we start to change our hearts, change our words. James says, behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths so that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, being so great and driven by fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small rudder, with the impulse of him steering desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. One of the things we can think about this is that the tongue being small, right? It's not just that it steers and that it has such a big impact. Let's go back sort of in reverse. If we start to steer our words in a right way, it's focusing us in really on the heart. You're forced to think about what's in your heart. You're forced to come at it from a right and proper perspective. And so guiding your tongue, guiding your speech, you begin to help steer your heart in the right way. Right? So we can look at it again, like I said earlier, we work on these things in tandem. You can't work on your speech without working on your heart. That's really at the core of it. As you work on your heart and what's in your heart, focused on how that impacts your speech improves. And what you say improves and how it encourages others. So we start thinking in that direction, right? The Bible also has some recommendations for us. There are many, many proverbs on this topic, but one suggestion is to speak less. Proverbs 10, verse 19 says, in the abundance of words, transgression does not cease, but one restraining his lips is prudent. There are many other proverbs along a similar line. They're basically saying, you know, you can hold back on what you're saying, speak a little less, listen a little more, and you will be all the better for it. Then from there, if we look over at Ephesians, turn over to Ephesians 4. This is really where we want to be. Ephesians 4, verse 29. In the New International Version, it says it this way. It says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. Very much along the lines of what Mr. Dowd spoke about last week. That it may benefit those who listen. So the words that are coming out of our mouths, imagine if every word out of your mouth, even in the trivial things, especially in the trivial things, right? When we don't think that it matters. But imagine if every word that you said in some way impacted the person hearing or the people hearing in a positive way. If it built them up somehow, right? That seems pretty lofty and pretty unattainable. But that's the encouragement here, right? But only, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, the things that they need, that it may benefit those who listen. It's almost a first do no harm principle with our speech, right? With every word. We're first making sure, okay, what I'm about to say is not going to hurt somebody. Right? Is this not going to offend? Okay. That's a good starting place. Then from there, how is this going to impact someone? You know, how is this going to build them up? How is this going to encourage them? You know, is there a way to do even the littlest things, the littlest requests, in a way that is encouraging, pleasant for the person who's hearing, pleasant for the person who's hearing the request. I'd like to close with an excerpt from the Transforming Your Life booklet from chapter 7 called Growing to Spiritual Maturity. It says, to overcome the wrong use of speech, we need to ask God through the power of His Spirit to help us concentrate on encouraging and building up others instead of berating them or tearing them down. Our words should spring from a well of life, as we talked about earlier. Our talk should be as choice silver. We should pray to God that our speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. Keeping silent so that no corrupt communication slips out may be a step in the right direction, but keeping our mouth shut is not proof in itself that our nature has changed. Our nature has fundamentally changed when we begin using our tongue in a positive way. As it says, as we just read, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So use your superpower. Use your words.